Corpse Uncovered. I'm Peter Gillette, and I'm here with the legendary David Wise. You should know him from famous video game soundtracks such as Battletoads, the ukulele games, and of course Donkey Kong Country, you know, just to name a few of your many, many games. Welcome. That might not be the greatest introduction in the world. I'm sure you could probably do better, good. But
thank you very much. That was a very generous introduction. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm just going to go ahead and start out strong and just ask, sorry, I forgot what I was saying real quick.
That's all right.
Yeah, it's all good. But yeah, let's start out and say, how does it feel to have people rearranging and recording your music, you know, many, many years after you've created it? So,
it's very humbling, really. It's good to know that once upon a time I did something that people felt compelled to do a cover of or do their own interpretation of. So that's quite good, really. It's certainly feel good about it. It would be very different if nobody wanted to make covers of it.
Yeah, well, that's a good outlook for it. Did you ever expect people to make covers? You know, let's say when you're making aquatic ambience, like, did you expect people, you know, 20 years or so later? I don't know. I can't do math very well. But
yeah, it's over 25 years now, but yeah. I didn't expect anybody to make a cover of anything I did when I was making it 25 plus years ago.
Wow, that's wild. So that's great.
I mean, why would you? It was written for a video game. Video games were quite niche at the time, even the Super Nintendo games. And we were sort of locked in a battle trying to get the edge over the Sega Mega Drive. And I think this was just before the Sony PlayStation 1 came out as well.
Yeah.
So that was the main focus. But thinking that video games were going to be around in 25 plus years from that point on wouldn't have been a consideration.
I guess I never really thought about it like that. So how kind of has things changed since the beginning, you know, whenever you're composing for games like Battletoads or, you know, even before that? How is it like composing music back then as opposed to composing music nowadays?
Well, nowadays I can use a DAW, I use Cubase, and I am very fortunate to have access to some very, very good sound libraries. And there's lots of resource from the internet, because you can just, if you need a particular style, you can just dial in there, get a few pieces for inspiration and crack on. Whereas when I started, there was no internet, and you had to go and research albums yourself and buy them. So it was a completely different sort of thing. And you couldn't just play the keyboard and listen to what you've created. You'd have to transcribe it down onto a piece of paper and then type the data into an editor and assemble that code before you could listen to it. So there was quite a lot of maths involved, and there's quite a lot of patience and quite a lot of focus as well. And the focus is still there, but it's different. It doesn't, a lot of it isn't sidelined into doing technical stuff. You can concentrate more on the music and more on the performance and perhaps more on the sound as well, whereas a lot of the effort went into just getting the thing working in the early days.
Interesting, yeah. I guess I never really thought about that, huh?
Yeah, and even on the Super NES, because there was so little data, there was only 64K, we would... because there was so little data on the Super NES, only being 64K, we still typed everything into an editor and assembled it, because to use a MIDI program would have taken quite a sizable chunk of the available memory, which we wanted to use for sounds and sound effects and that kind of stuff.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. So at the beginning, it was technical. You had to give yourself limitations and whatnot, while opposed to today.
Well, I didn't give myself those limitations. Yeah. Those limitations were forced upon whoever was writing music at that time.
Yeah, I guess I should have rephrased that, huh?
And the NES was even more compromised because it only had four channels, four monophonic channels, two pulse waves, a triangle wave, and a noise channel. And it was, I think, the nearest thing you could probably associate it to would be a doorbell.
Oh, wow.
And trying to get something musical out of doorbell was quite a challenge even then.
Yeah, that's wild. Well, I don't know if you've seen any of this, but it's funny. There's a VGM person, Family Jewels. I don't know if you've heard of him.
I might have done. I'm not very good at remembering names. Sorry.
He did a thing with Grant Kirkhope a while back, but it's funny that you mentioned that it's close to a doorbell because he has this whole series. He has like a reprogrammable doorbell. And it's a huge kind of meme kind of in the space. So I think it's kind of funny that you referenced that.
Well, the actual chip we used did actually feature in quite a number of doorbells at that time.
Really?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So there's more than a passing resemblance to it being a doorbell.
So basically what you're saying is if we want to have some sound like that, we should try to find a doorbell from that era and mess around with
that. I mean there were ones that played little tunes and they were definitely the same sound chip in there. You could hear it was the same sound chip.
That's interesting. I feel like I should know that, but now I do.
Which is great. It was you can find out the actual code of the, it's something like an A07 chip or something like that that they used to use in the NES. It's basically an 8910 chip, which was used in quite a lot of early computers.
Ooh, okay, interesting. Cool. Well, let's kind of change gears a little bit, a little off track, but let's talk about earlier this year. I believe you performed at MAGFest.
We did. Yeah. Yes, we'd been all out playing on New Year's Eve. So we'd been up in the morning, and because we were going away, we spent time with our families and friends and that kind of stuff. We went off and played gigs until about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Beautiful.
And we drove straight down to Heathrow to get on the flight to go over to Washington. And we were so tired at this point, we were actually screaming at each other to keep everybody awake in the van. So, because we just couldn't afford to fall asleep.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It would have been very dangerous. So we got there, and of course you perk up a bit, and we got on this flight, very cramped flight. We're all in the back in economy because there were four of us. And it wasn't very comfy. So we got there, and of course we needed to adjust to the time zone as well. And we had obviously terrible jet lag. It wasn't it was a decent plane, but there are better planes for jet lag, and this wasn't one of them. So we stayed up until sort of midnight, I suppose. Didn't get much sleep. I think we had about 7 hours sleep that night. But then we didn't play until midnight of that night in Washington time,
wow,
which is the equivalent of 6 a.m. in the morning UK time. So I think it was something like, it was just hours. It was, I don't know, sort of 3 days with 7 hours sleep before we actually played. It was, we could have done it a lot better. We did ask if we could play it at a different date, but apparently that was the only time slot. I didn't realise how bad it would be, but I was hallucinating before we actually went on stage. I was so tired.
Oh, no.
I mean, poor Christina. I called her oboe a clarinet, which was... I didn't even get her name right as well, and I've known her for years, so that's how bad it was.
Wow.
So I think we could have done a lot better, but we were zombies at that point, but we went out and did it anyway. We did the best we could under the circumstances, but it's a great show. It's a great event. And fortunately, after having a bit of sleep that night, there were a couple of other nights that I played with other bands, and I think they were a bit more successful, really.
Oh, great. Yeah, so what's it like interacting with the folks at MAGFest, people very much knowing about your work and whatnot? Is it a different vibe than, you know, walking down the street, getting groceries or something?
Yeah, I mean, MAGFest is, if you haven't been, you've got to go. You've got to, it's not on in 2021, but hopefully in 2022 it should be back on.
Beautiful.
But it's an experience like no other. There's lots of cosplay there. There's lots of bands all the time. People are just mingling around. It really is. If you're into music and games, obviously, Mag, and you've got to go. It is. You've got to experience at least once in your life. Mm. And it's nice because it's at a hotel. It's not like there are these shows, aren't they? These big sort of outdoor things where they have toilets dug into the ground. It's nothing like that. It's a very civilized affair. And it's great fun, and I'd recommend it to anyone. You've got to go.
Sweet. Yeah, definitely. I didn't get a chance to do it this year, but and I was planning on doing next year, but doesn't look like that's the case now.
It looks like 2022. I'm going to try and get out for 2022 as well.
Amazing.
So I think that would be fun. I think they were hoping for Spyro was sort of penciled in for this year, whether they manage it again next year, but it would be great to... go and celebrate Spyro the Dragon. It's a great game, and it's got a great soundtrack from Stuart Copeland.
Yeah, that soundtrack is so great. I adore that. Fantastic. Yeah, definitely. Magfest seems like such a fun time.
It is. It's really is like nothing else. So if you haven't been, get yourselves there.
Good. You heard it from the man himself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So now let's talk about something that you kind of teased on Twitter a little while back. You said that you were going to be launching a YouTube channel of some sorts about producing.
Yes, I'm doing it very, very sketchily at the moment. We're just doing the initial things. Of course, COVID came and ruined everything this year.
Of course,
as it has done for you know, pretty much the whole world. And so it's really slowed us down because we had an album that we were recording. And even now in the UK, we still can't meet up in more than six people at a time, and we have to keep ourselves in bubbles legally, and which means going and physically recording somebody and being in the same room as them with enough airflow and enough distance from people not to make a recording really noisy is almost impossible.
Yeah, it's been slowed down. That's probably dang near impossible.
It's quite slow. So we have all these tracks that are ready to roll as soon as we're not in this unfortunate situation. So hopefully in about a month's time, if things improve, it might get worse, and that will really put the kibosh on things, to use an English phrase for ruining things.
Beautiful.
I mean, we have tried doing some of it remotely, but it's impossible because when you're working with somebody, if you're in the same room as them, you fire off ideas instantly. Even if you're working at the same time online, all those subtle cues are lost.
Like the little movements
things like an eyebrow movement and knowing whether somebody actually likes the take you've taken, or do you have to send an email just to suggest that, you know, we should do things differently. So it really slows down that that work of, you know, some things work on your own, but when you're actually recording performances from somebody, I think you do need to be in that same space or at least next door so you can explain to somebody how you want it, but online it just doesn't work.
That's okay. Yeah, that kind of makes sense. So so what kind of stuff can we expect? How much can you tell us about the channel?
Well, I do a lot of conferences, which is great. I get invited to various places around the world and talk at these conferences. And we do lots of retro shows as well, which is always great fun. And sometimes we take the band as well. And people ask us, have we got anything to sell? You know, because they'd like to buy stuff. And of course, most of the stuff we've done has been for Nintendo, and some of it's been for Microsoft. And you can't legally sell them something that you don't own the IP for.
That makes sense, yeah.
So we decided to basically create our own IP, and we have lots of IPs ready to bring out, and the first one of those is Salamandos.
Okay.
And we're producing this album. It's going to be a story as well. Lots of great artwork from Kevin Baylis. Kevin worked for Rare for years. He was the main artist on many games that we worked on. And we're producing this music and this artwork, and it's part of a package really to celebrate the type of games that we used to work on. And this particular one is definitely got an amphibian or an amphibious 80s kind of vibe going to it, sort of veering towards those Spielberg-esque type films with some of the cartoon type things that were around in the era.
Beautiful.
So that's what we're doing, and we're having great fun doing it, and we can't wait to finish it and release it properly onto the world. So we're just experimenting at the moment with YouTube channels and that kind of stuff.
Great. Awesome. That's definitely something that I'm looking forward to. I remember you tweeting out about all of that, so definitely something to look forward to.
Yes, I'm still practicing with green screens and getting the lighting correct, and also the filters and the gammas and that kind of stuff, so you can get a nice image.
Yeah.
I've done a very rough kind of thing for Snake Rattle and Roll. We use that for, I mean, talking about things not really working in COVID, we did last year, 2019, we went over and we played at Retro Spiel Messen in Norway, and it was a wonderful evening. It was the longest night or longest day of the year. And as the sun went down and it didn't fully set, we were playing at this amazing brewery. And it's the only time a brewery has run out of beer.
Oh, wow.
And it was a huge brewery as well. So we're playing upstairs in this venue. There's about 400 people there. And the sun was setting. It was just absolutely awesome. And it was a great night. And we tried to recreate something on the same kind of lines, a shortened version online, but it just doesn't translate very well, because to try and get people who have to isolate into the same room at the same time is, and record and sync up, it's just absolutely impossible.
Yeah.
And so you've got all of these different disciplines that you need to do. You need to record people separately, you need to record them not in the same room as you, and then you need to sync it all up, all of these different parts, and then suddenly you've got to become a video editor and try and sync all of these bits up. So it took a long time, and it's so much easier just to go and play it live as a, you know, as a unit.
Yeah, for sure.
It takes many, many times longer to try and cobble together something that looks as though it's sort of kind of like a live thing. Anyway, one of those tracks that we did was Snake Rattle and Roll. I think it was Fangamer, that's it. Fangamer released an album for Snake Rattle and Roll. It's got the NES soundtrack on. It's got the Mega Drive version as well. And so I just did a small type of thing online and took some of the sax parts that I'd recorded for the live recording for that. But the next thing that I'm doing on my channel is about the NES. So I'm going to start at the beginning and talk. I'm going to do two. One's going to be a sort of general video about the NES and the kind of sounds it made, and then the more involved video will be about how you can create sounds or a soundtrack that will be reminiscent and have the same limitations as the original NES, so you can create an authentic NES soundtrack for your material.
That sounds very interesting to me. Especially with the limitations and
because you really do have to think about those limitations. You've got literally two lead voices really, and you've got one bass voice, and it's very hard to suggest chords. So it's a great educational tool to try and make music that is reminiscent of another tune, or perhaps one that you transcribed, and to get the message across. And you really have to think sideways on those to try and convincingly get them over to people. And your percussion channel is in various different pitches, so it's quite a challenge as well. But it does make you realise how important bass, rhythm and chords are, and it very much shaped my composition style over the, since then, really. So it was very helpful for the Super NES.
Great. That's awesome. Yeah, that's definitely something that I'm sure many people are looking forward to, and
I think really as it's quite an interesting way of looking at things, and it's also a good educational tool to any aspiring video game composers, and it's quite nice to have quirky soundtracks done in that kind of traditional style just for a bit of flavor every now and again.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, Shovel Knight did an amazing job with limiting kind of the sound and the visuals as well, and they added some improvements, some like quality of life type of things, but you still get the same vibe from that.
Yes, yeah, and it's good fun, but it's it's nice to achieve it, and then it's nice to quickly zip back to 2020 and have something that's all singing, all dancing, and without limitation.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's again, going back to it, it's always good when you're learning to compose music, or even, you know, as a composer in your own right, to actually put some limitations on your work. So if you're another decent thing to do is to allow yourself only 5 notes to play with. You can use any chord below it, but that melody can only have 5 specific notes. And it's amazing, even if you're using the same melody in those same 5 notes, how you can make it sound completely different with the arrangement and the different chords behind those same 5 notes. And that's another good exercise to do. So that's for a video later down the line.
Great. Well, I know I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, well, and you kind of touched on this, but I'm interested to see what you would say about this. For anyone who is getting into composing or getting into arranging or recording video game music or video game-like music, I don't know what makes a song video game-like, but what would you recommend people just starting out to do?
Well, fortunately, the technology has come completely down in price over the years, and you can get a pretty decent system. I mean, you can go, if you've got an iPad or a Samsung, you can get Cubase 3, and it gives you an immediate start.
Mm.
Or if you're lucky enough to have a decent laptop, you could get Cubase, the Elements version, and they come with a good stock of sounds.
Mm.
But there's lots. There's GarageBand that Apple do. There's let me see. There are just so many good programs that don't cost a whole bunch, that give you a whole plethora of tools that you can use to get something pretty decent straight out of the box for very little money.
Mm.
So if I was telling somebody to start off, I'd be telling them to investigate those kind of avenues and just dive in, really. And the good thing as well now is that with YouTube, there are so many people offering different qualities of insight into these kind of tutorials, that there's plenty of information to see, and even the bad ones are quite good.
That's great. I think that sentence is great. Even the bad ones are quite good.
Well, you see some people, they're trying to explain how to play a song, you know, something on the guitar, and you're thinking, I'm not a guitar player, but I know that chord is not right. But that in itself is good, because it makes you want to go and find the right tutorial and find out the right chord.
I never thought about it like that.
In a kind of inverse way, it makes you realize that, you know, there are other people out there giving advice who might not be the best people to teach you, but it certainly opens your eyes that not everybody is up there, really. Yeah. So just dig in and go and search a load of these insights and perspectives on different tutorial methods. And of course, we all learn differently as well.
Mm.
So whilst one video might work for somebody, or one book might work for person A, person B might learn in a completely different way. So having lots of different videos is always beneficial, and it's good to have that cross section of videos to look at and compare.
That's great. Well, something that I like to kind of investigate on this podcast is I like to ask what your current setup is, and you know, recording equipment, and also in filming gear equipment. I don't know if you have any, but and for anyone listening, you don't need expensive gear to do any kind of production of any kind, but I just like to ask, just to see, look at what different people are using. So if you wouldn't mind, what kind of gear are you using right now?
I think I've got my laptop, which is i9900i9900, which is, I don't know, it's something like a 16-core laptop.
Mm. Nice.
And it's running at 5 gigahertz, so it's quite fast.
Beautiful. That's gorgeous.
And yeah, I mean, that's the if you get the fastest computer you can afford, that's the key to it. And then everything else is a nice add-on. I think the next thing that's important after that, I've got some Adam speakers, which I'm looking at, and they're good. I think probably even more important than that, I've got some, let me just have a look at these. I've got some DT880s 600 ohm headphones, which have very low distortion on them because they're 600 ohms. You have to drive them quite hard. That's always useful because when you're handing out masters to people, you want to make sure that the distortion you're using is intentional and not consequential. So that's quite an important thing. The hardware, I've got a keyboard, I've got an X-Touch, and I've got a machine jam as well. The machine jam's right at the centre because it's got lots of buttons and lots of sliders right in front of me, and I can instantly use those to control anything.
Beautiful.
And the rest of it are microphones. I've got quite a good selection of Rode microphones because they're not too expensive and they sound decent. So I'm talking to you on an NT3 or a stereo pair of NT3s at the moment.
Nice, I know that. That sounds very familiar to me.
And I've got a few others as well. I think I've got an SE as well. That's a very good microphone. That's very clean. So anything important normally goes on that one because that's very good for vocals.
Cool. Amazing.
So yeah, just having some decent microphones is probably the best thing as well after your laptop that you can invest in, and some decent headphones. You've got to know what your mix is going to sound like to other people.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And yeah, and monitors. I mean, even if you haven't got the, you know, the Adam speakers or Genelex, if you can get something, you'll get an idea of what how other people might listen to your stuff. And again, car stereos are great. Go and put it on the car stereo and see what it sounds like.
I never thought about doing the car stereo.
No, that's really important. And the other thing that's important, however good your speakers are, go and turn them up and go and listen to it in different rooms. That's important because walls filter out different things, and you need a good cross-section of listening experiences to realize. If you go into the other room and all you can hear is bass, then you know you've got too much bass, or if all you can hear is vocals, you know you need to turn them down. And consequently, if you can't hear the vocals, you really do need to turn those up.
Wow. Yeah, that makes a whole bunch of sense.
Yeah.
That's great.
That comparable thing is really very important. For every mix you do, I often, well, pretty much everyone, I'll put the mix on, listen to it, and then go and listen to it from outside just to make sure that it's okay elsewhere. And the car stereo, if I'm doing new kind of stuff, I'll always put it on the car stereo as well.
Cool. Yeah, that's just stuff that I never would have thought to do, but it makes sense in retrospect to, you know, give it all different types of listening environments. I think I have heard some people saying that once they're finished recording or mixing, then they'll export it and then put it onto their phone and then listen to it through their phone speaker, because that's what it seems like most people are listening to nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thing to do, but phone speakers just sound horrendous, don't they? But
yeah.
and there's always such top-end clutter in phone speakers.
Yeah.
There's just all that. I don't know. There just seems to be a lot of superfluous noise in the top end, you know, above 12K that is just ringing around that needs bringing under control.
Yeah.
I suppose a good thing to do there would be to get people who put stuff on phones to actually put a filter on and get rid of all the top end.
Ooh. Interesting.
Well, most people can't hear that top end. Kids can. And if you've been a sound engineer or a composer for years, chances are you've been listening out for it for years, and you can still hear quite a lot of the top end because it's, you know, you're concentrating on it. But there are definitely some people who keep in the rubbish in the top end, and it just rattles around, and it really grates if it's not been mixed perfectly. And it's quite an irritation for me, because you get a lot of YouTube videos where obviously they don't have the best equipment to record. And it's all it's all quite nasty up there. So I turn off at that point.
Okay, so that's something to look at, is the top end.
Oh, and the bottom end as well, because
the bottom end.
Your bass end takes tons of energy. You know, the main thing in a mix is bass. That takes all the energy. And a lot of people like to get it very bass heavy when they don't need to. So
that makes sense.
So rolling off some of the lower bass below 80 is probably a good idea as well. I mean, there are times, especially if you're doing soundtrack work where you really need that low bit just to give the sense of danger and impending doom. Probably not in a pop song.
Yeah, well, who knows? Maybe you might want doom and gloom in a pop song.
Yeah, but even so, you don't need any sort of, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
LFM frequency experience down there.
Yeah. Well, either way, thanks so much for hopping on, having a fun little conversation.
Uh-huh.
I definitely don't want to hold you for too long.
Okay, thank you.
But before we, close out, one thing that I like to ask everyone is to shoot some recommendation on either a video game cover or a video game soundtrack that, that you've been listening to, that you've been vibing with. Is there anything you'd like to recommend?
When I'm writing and writing heavily at the moment, I actually don't listen to anybody else's work, especially video game work.
Oh, interesting.
At all. Huh. So I generally tend not to listen to video game soundtracks unless somebody's raving about it. So, oh, you must listen to this. So things like Celeste would be a very good soundtrack to listen to.
Celeste.
And,
cool.
And also, what was the other one I was listening to? Ori, the sequel to Ori.
Oh, yeah. I can't think of the name right now, but
yes.
Yeah, the new Ori soundtrack.
Yeah, absolutely superb, that one.
That one. Cool. Amazing. Well, yeah, and also before we end, is there anything else that you'd like to shout out? Any upcoming stuff that's coming up that might be interesting for people to check out?
Well, there's always stuff coming out, fortunately, but as usual, we're all held to NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, and
oh yeah,
if I told you, I'd have to shoot you, and it would get messy and that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
unfortunately, I can't.
Can't say anything.
No,
as of
not
right
at all. It's yeah, cool. You wouldn't want to. Let's
yeah, no,
let's keep
definitely
the suspense
nothing
and the surprise.
Yes, for sure. So great. Well, we look forward to seeing the YouTube channel and the fun non-disclosure stuff.
When it comes
without
out.
Without being shot and whatnot. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Whenever that comes out. And thank you again so much for being on.
Well, thank you for entertaining me for however long.